Hi everybody, it's Carol Tice, the Den Mother, and welcome to our second annual Freelance Writers Den mini mentoring live call. This is actually really about my favorite event of the year, and this time joining me is one of our moderators, John Soares from The Productive Writer. Hi, John.
Hi there. Very good to be here, Carol. My website is Productive Writers, plural, productivewriters.com.
Oh, thank you for that correction. And the way this call works is a little different from any of our other Den meetings. Usually we have some kind of presentation going on in the first half and then we take questions. But this one has no set topic, and we're basically here to give you some on-the-fly mentoring on whatever questions you have, whatever you're struggling with, whatever you are having questions about. And if you call in on the phone line, we will unmute you and ask you your questions, and we can just talk live. So far, I have a big one person who is on the phone, and everyone else is on the webcast just listening on their computer, which is fine. If you want to do that, then you can put questions in the little Q&A box. And Teresa has a question, so I will read it off while everyone is putting in more questions. And then I'm going to take some live phone calls. So Teresa says, I attended Ed Gandia's webinar yesterday. Yes, I did as well. And you say, and of course his thoughts are totally different. I'm not sure what you think they're different from. Obviously, for those who don't know, Ed Gandia teaches about email marketing and getting copywriting clients from like medium to large size corporations is sort of the system that he teaches. And I'm very familiar with it. We've had him on the Den several times. You say, for the new person breaking into a different line of writing, which would be easier, queries for magazines or Ed's way? Just curious. Well, what's your reaction to that, John?
Well, I think it's two different things. Ed Gandia is focusing primarily on writing for businesses, corporations, and writing various materials that B2B communication, B2C communication. Whereas the magazines it's just a different ball game. So Ed's methods are more slanted towards the warm email prospecting and things like that to the businesses.
Yeah, I mean the question is, which do you want to do? Because
mm-hmm.
they're totally different types of writing work, reporting articles where you interview people and, you know, talk about a trend or provide useful information in a service piece. And in copywriting, you're serving the needs of a business, and you're going to write whatever they tell you to write, and you're going to talk to whoever they tell you to talk to, and you're going to help them sell their products and services. And, you know, for some people, that's just like the dark side of the force, doing marketing writing, and they would rather die than do it. So I don't know if your question, Teresa, is which form of marketing is easier to get a win on. It really depends on you and your ability to write a strong query letter with a strong story idea in it. I can tell you, we're just wrapping up four-week journalism school, and having looked at people's attempts to craft story ideas, it's clearly very challenging. It's a real skill to learn how to develop an idea so that it is a fit for a magazine and that you'll get an assignment. You know, marketing to businesses is a numbers game where you're just marketing, usually to businesses initially that you have some knowledge of. You used to work at a retail clothing store, so you're hitting apparel companies, or, you know, you used to work at a bank, so you're hitting financial services companies, you know, something along those lines. Or, you know, you're hitting local businesses you patronize as an initial break-in kind of idea. And, you know, just going until you hit some clients. I mean, most people I know make hundreds of cold calls or might send, you know, 100 targeted emails where you've really researched the prospect. And queries for magazines, it's just so variable. It depends on what magazine you're dreaming of being in and, you know, how good you are at idea development. There's sort of a lot of variables there, so you might ask us some follow-up questions.
And also, if you wind up writing for businesses, there's oftentimes not as much competition for that as there is for magazines. And once, if you can really get going on that, I would say the highest paid freelance writers are the ones that are writing for businesses. They get good at it, or they specialize in certain things like white papers or things like that. And they get to where they can command really high hourly rates. And that's just that's a great way to be successful as a freelance writer. You can do that, and then if you know once you get successful at that, if you also want to write for magazines and that's what really floats your boat, then you'll have you'll be making enough money that you can carve out some time to do that if you want.
It's true. I don't really know anyone who earns super well who doesn't have at least some copywriting in their background. And, you know, it doesn't have some business clients. I know quite a few people have a mix of publications and companies. But, yeah, I don't know. I don't really know anyone who earns much more than, like, maybe 50 or 60 writing just for publications. So,
Linda
Formicelli,
I think, makes more than that. I've seen her post a number that was more than that, but she's definitely right at the top of that.
No, but she does a lot of copywriting, too. She is one of those people who have business clients. Yeah, she's written for Sprint and all kinds of corporate clients. So people know her as the magazine lady, but that is not all she does. And I actually had that experience early on where I was writing on a special section of the Seattle Times with a few other freelancers, and I asked one of them who else she wrote for, and she said, oh, Ford Motor. And I just was stunned. I had never imagined that you could do both, you know. At the same time, and that's when I started to learn the rules of how you can do that, you know, as long as you disclose any relationships and, you know, you don't, like, try and write a reported story about one of your paying copywriting clients and, you know, you avoid conflicts of interest in it, but that you can still do it. That was sort of, like, first I learned of it. So, anyway, let's take some live phone calls because I love to do that. This one looks like it's coming from Norwood, Massachusetts. Hello, and it says Joseph on the phone, but I don't know who it really is. Hello, anyone here from Massachusetts on the telephone? Hello.
Hello.
Hi, who's this? Hello.
Hey, Carol, that was me saying
hello. Oh, that was you. Well,
yeah,
I don't know.
Hello, hello, Joseph, talk to us.
If they won't say hello, then we move on. This next one says it's from Woodbury, Connecticut. Hello?
Well, I'm Southbury, Connecticut. I don't know if that's who you
are. I can hear you, so you must be. So tell us your first name.
I'm Nancy.
Hi, Nancy. So
hi, Nancy.
Welcome to the call.
Hi.
And
thank
what
you.
What is your mentoring question?
Well, I write fiction. I've written two books, one of short stories and one sci-fi. And I can do other kinds of writing, but, and you know, I'm interested, though, in marketing my books. And I wondered if you could give me any advice about that.
Boy, I've never marketed a fiction book.
You haven't.
We really don't focus on fiction, and we're
oh, you
mostly
don't.
Not fiction writers in the den. We're mostly, well, I mean, we have quite a few people who are writing fiction, but the focus of our training in the den is on mostly on nonfiction.
I see.
And blogging and, you know, promoting, writing your own information products and,
right.
And that range of stuff. I have a couple of websites I could recommend for learning to build an author platform and promote your fiction books. I like Larry Brooks' StoryFix site.
Larry Brooks' StoryFix?
Yeah.
Okay.
He's all about that, about building author platform, and Writer Unboxed. These are people who won top 10 blogs for writers at the same time that I did, so I kind of got to know them.
Sean Platt is a fiction writer, and he's also a nonfiction writer, and I'm not sure how much he's sharing as far as how he's being successful with his fiction and what he's doing, but he might be another potential somebody to at least watch and see what he does. I know he's very active on selling his works on the Amazon Kindle.
Okay, I'm doing that too, Kindle and paperback. Is it Platz, Platz?
No.
It's Sean, S-E-A-N, and then his last name is Platt, P-L-A-T-T.
Oh, okay.
And I'm not sure what his website is right now. I don't know if
I know what it is.
It. Okay.
It's The Digital Writer is his new site.
Oh, okay.
But is it .com or .net?
Don't know, but I'm sure you
I'll Google it. The digital,
yeah,
what was it?
He is writing fiction serials. He made his money copywriting and then teaching people how to break in. And then he became a serial fiction writer, and he was so successful with that Amazon actually signed him and his writing partner, and they're publishing a serial for Amazon as an exclusive.
Oh, okay.
So, yeah, he'd be great.
Well, as a fiction writer, do you think copywriting would be something good for me to get in? I mean, it's easy for me to write anything, really. That doesn't mean to say I'm fabulous. I don't know. But I'm a good writer, and I do need to make some money. So perhaps I need to get into nonfiction.
Well, copywriting is a good way to go. And if you can get good enough at it and you're good enough at marketing yourself, you can make really decent money.
Yeah.
And that can really help to fund your fiction, which I'm guessing is your real love.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, well, it was good enough for Salman Rushdie. He wrote copy for Ogilvy and Mather.
Right.
Wow.
Right.
Yeah. Lots and lots of people learned a lot of writing discipline writing copy.
Right.
So,
right.
Yeah, good place to look at. All right. Well, thanks for your questions. Let me go on to someone who is in, who it says is in North Dade, Florida, but it doesn't say their name. Hello. Anybody on the phone? Hello. People who are on the phone, please pay attention when we unmute so that I can talk to you. Here's Vonnie in Fort Lauderdale.
Oh, I just plugged in because I couldn't get on the web for some reason.
Oh, but, well, you don't have any questions?
I don't have any questions. I just want to listen today.
All righty. Here's Linda in Nashville. Hi, Linda.
Hi. I don't have any questions either. The audio quality on my computer was really poor. So I'm just listening in, too, although I'll probably come up with a question eventually.
Okay. Well, if you do, ding me on the Q&A, and I'll unmute you again. Let me go back to Norwood, Mass. Hello. Anyone on the phone here? Hello? Huh. All right. Well, I'm going back to Q&A on the website while people wait to give me more questions on the phone. So Cheryl says, I bought The Renegade Writer in 2004, dating ourselves here, back when snail mail queries were still the norm, and I learned about finding editors' email addresses and sending queries to them. A lot of changes over the years, and now most publications accept email queries. Writer's guidelines will show an email address to send pictures to, like editor@magazine, or maybe a form to fill out. I'm 50-50 when it comes to using the email in the guidelines or sending directly to an editor if I track down their personal email. Any thoughts on this? Yeah, you so don't want to ever send a query to that editor@magazine email. You just do not want to do that. You want to find their real email. She says, do magazines really want their guidelines adhered to and sent to the generic mail? You know what? I don't know when the last time was that I read a writer's guideline. I just find the editor's email and email them. How about you, John?
That's what I do, too, and there's various ways you can do that. I like to do it through Google. You can do Google searches where you put @ and then the name of the company and then a space and then type the name of the editor. And oftentimes you'll find it on their website, or it'll just pop up somewhere that you'll get an email address that way. Or sometimes you can just find it at some portion of the site. And you can also check LinkedIn. If they're on LinkedIn, sometimes you will see their email address there on LinkedIn.
I'm a fan of Googling contact, editor, publication name, and usually I can find it. Or, yeah, LinkedIn is obviously great.
Yeah.
Yeah, always good. So Laura has a pretty classic question. Is it better to get really specialized with your writing career or to be more of a generalist and diversify your offerings? John, you want to start on that?
Yes. I lean more towards the specialist camp, and here's why. When you specialize in two or three or four areas, you can get very good at those areas. You get well known in those areas, and businesses, once they see that you're good, they will come to you oftentimes just on bid and offering you really good projects. And you get to where you can do them really, really quickly because you know all the material and everything that's in the field. And so that's why I think specialization is a good way to go. For people that are generalists, you do have the advantage that you get to be in a lot of different areas, and it may be perhaps more interesting if you get to write about a lot of different things, but you'll spend a lot more time marketing just to get the work, and then a lot of that work won't pay as well as if you were working in a specialized field.
Yeah, I'm agreeing with all of that. The thing is, as you go in an area, if you keep going in that area, you know where all the bodies are buried. You know where the good experts are. You know what the trends are in the industry, and it all gets easier and faster, and that helps your hourly rate. And as John says, as you build that expertise, you get more offers in that expertise. I mean, at this point, that happens to me all the time. You know, oh, I saw you write on Forbes about franchising, and I was wondering if you would write about this franchise for this, you know. Yeah, it just... It goes back to my Newtonian law of freelancing, which is that work of one kind tends to lead to more work of the same kind at the same speed and in the same direction. That's why you want to think about what you're pitching and what you're writing about, because what you write about will tend to give birth to more assignments along those lines. So if you've looked at a niche and you've seen, well, I kind of love this niche, but I see that there's like no money here. You know, there's not big companies. There's not big publications. They don't pay good rates. You know, if the more you write on that, the more it will give birth to more low-paid work. So I want to address the word really in this question. Is it better to get really specialized? And the answer to that is no. And I had this actually on – I just did a big mailbag post where – I had two people in the medical area saying, you know, I really want to only write about healthcare communications with, you know, between patients and doctors. That's too specialized. One of them said, I only want to write about, you know, more holistic ways to treat mentally ill children than medications. That's too specialized. I want to write about healthcare. That's good. I, at this point, have half a dozen different niches I write in, and that's actually what I'm in favor of, is developing more than one niche on which you can claim a lot of expertise as you go, because one industry could die. Look what happened to real estate. You know, so I have experience in franchising, insurance, legal, real estate, major public company coverage. So if one of these areas is biting, you know, the market's down, maybe there isn't as much coverage of the big publics, I have other areas I can turn to. And you don't want to be, you know, too crazy specialized. You know, I write a lot about small business finance, but you wouldn't want to say, oh, I only want to write about crowdsourcing as a fundraising method. You know, it's too tiny. But the other thing is that I find that new freelance writers have this conversation kind of endlessly with themselves and don't get started because they're trying to figure out what niche they should specialize in a vacuum, sitting in their house without talking to anyone or pitching anyone or trying to write anything. And I find that is like the biggest income killer around. Pick a few areas you think you're interested in, they have some basic knowledge of, and start going. And the market will tell you where this is going to work, where the marketplace will respond to you on some of those niches and others. And then you'll see, I got a response on this one, but it paid crummy, and I got a response on this one, and it paid really great. And it'll show you what direction to go. John, you had more?
Yeah, and that's a really, really important point, is to just keep pursuing niches that interest you and marketing as best as you can to them, being very smart about that. And the market will tell you where you should go and what you should do. Initially, when you're targeting, though, is look for industries, areas where overall there's a lot of money spent. So if you're going to write for businesses, write in an area where there are businesses that have annual incomes in the hundreds of millions of dollars or billions of dollars, for example, because they have a lot of money to pay for their communications.
Yeah, right on. And, you know, think about, if you think about like luxury goods, you know, the yachting industry, the private airline industry, the jewelry industry, you know, financial services. These are places with money, and their clients
and,
have money. You know, companies that sell copiers, you know, that sell like expensive technology. All of these places have money to spend on marketing, and their trade publications have advertisers, and they have money to assign articles, and, you know, so it's all going to work well. So you want to do that research and get a sense of, you know, maybe you're dreaming of writing a lot about quilting. This is like a really low-cost hobby, and there's not going to be a lot of money in it. You might do it for fun, but, you know, it's not a business decision if you're focusing on that. Anyway, Justin says, what's the best way to go about guest posting on prominent blogs? Is it simply a matter of emailing the blogger and asking? Also, do people typically only guest on blogs similar to their own, or can you guest on a blog that covers a different topic? Lots of questions there. The best way to go about guest posting on prominent blogs is to find the ones that are encouraging guest posts and have guest posts and look at their process. Usually they will have guidelines. They'll have an email or a form they want you to fill out, and you need to follow their guidelines. I, as you know, pay $50 a post and take guest posts on my blog, and I find that very few people can actually follow my instructions. When you say, is it simply a matter of emailing the blogger and asking? That's no. And people do that all the time. They'll email me and say, wow, I found your blog and it's really amazing and I'd like to write a guest post on it. Okay? And the answer is no. It's not okay. You have to send them a story idea. What are you going to blog about? Send them a quick little outline of the points you're going to cover. You have to, you know, do a query just like you were really like you're pitching a magazine. Not a whole lot different. And if you do that, you will likely be able to get an assignment. I'm at the point in my career where I actually just send the story because I know that it's going to be accepted. But I've been doing this a long time. The question
and it's really important to do your research on the blog. Look at the guidelines and look at the blog itself and really do pitch something very specific so that the person knows, hey, this person reads my blog, this person knows my audience and is aware what I like to do. That's really important to do that.
Yeah, the question of posting on blogs similar to your own or a different topic is actually one of a lot of debate in the blogging industry. Some people do the strategy where they do blogs where it's a little tangential to their own topic in hopes of luring a different group of readers who hasn't discovered them before. And other people try and really hit it on the head. I had an interesting experience with Copyblogger, which people may know I have had very, you know, I've probably done, I don't know, 8 or 10 posts for them, and they were very successful. But I did not get a lot of traffic to my site. I found that their audience did not overlap well with mine, and that's why I'm not guest posting for them anymore. Now I guest post for Freelance Switch, which I've found is a better match for me, and they actually pay. So it's like a beauty situation. And that's the dream you want to look for. And there are sites that pay, you know. All the Envato sites that pay that company. So you kind of have
people,
to...
I occasionally get people pitching me for blog posts, guest posts, and they are really just looking for a backlink. They're trying to get some. They're trying to boost their page rank so that they can overall rise in Google search for whatever their term is. But they're not really involved in freelancing or writing or anything like that. They're involved in, I don't know, selling martial arts uniforms or something like that. And they're just trying to just get like backlink.
Yeah, thank you so much for raising that whole issue. Yeah, there's a ton of that going along, backlink syncing, and that's why you have to send a really pro pitch so they know that you're not one of these scams that are going around. And we get these all the time. They look like they're written by robots. you know.
Oh, God, yeah. I even click the spam bot. The ones that don't address me by name and make it clear that they actually know the name of my site and what I do, I sometimes just click spam on them because that's really what they're doing. They're just spamming it out, hoping that I will take some article that they've already written and put it on my site and give them a backlink to whatever sort of scammy site they're running.
Yeah, that has nothing to do with my topic.
And, yeah, exactly.
Yeah, and the other deal is that they'll pitch stuff that we've recently done, so they haven't done their research. You know, they'll pitch topics I've done a bunch of times and or that I could easily do myself. And obviously with guest posts, I'm looking for something I can't do myself. You know, I didn't recently get off content mills or stop looking at Craigslist ads or use Pinterest to get 25,000 subscribers. That's all. Those are all guest posts that I've taken recently. So, you know, I'm looking for people's really authentic personal freelancing success stories is what they almost all are, and so few people manage to send me that. So Millie says, how important is my phone number? She moved and, like, her area code isn't actually correct. I wouldn't worry about it too much. You're only one time zone off from where you moved. And, you know, I don't think it's big. I mean, if you get people calling you in the middle of the night because of it, you might want to change it. So great question from Jana. Would you talk a bit about pitching yourself when you do not have a degree? That is all I ever do because I don't have a degree. So I have yet to meet someone, including two staff jobs I applied for without a degree that required a degree, who has asked about my degree. It's a complete non-issue. It's all about what's on the page. You write your way there. That is totally it.
And that is the case really in most writing areas. They just want to know, can you write well and can you write factually? It just so happens, I primarily am a freelance writer for higher education companies, and in that case, education does matter and they want you to have a degree. But even there, I know a lot of people with bachelor's degrees that are getting to write test questions and lecture outlines and things like that for college textbooks, oftentimes even in areas that they don't have their degree in, like they have a degree in physics or something, and they wind up working on a sociology textbook. So it really is just a function of, can you really do a high-quality job in your work? That's what they're looking for.
Yeah, it's just they don't care if you learned it under a freeway overpass or at Columbia. The question is, can you write? And I actually have edited the work of people who, like, graduated from Medill, one of the most prestigious journalism schools, who just really could not write. That's all they care about. It's not a field where credentials are the main deal. It's, can you write this or can you not? Because a lot of times the answer is no, they can't. A few more.
If I could make one point about that, though, if you are writing for a really specialized business, like if you want to write for the pharmaceutical industry or the engineering industry, and you need to write various materials for them, they may really want you to have significant background in their field because you need that just to be able to understand what they are doing so that you can clearly explain it. So that's another area where sometimes having the educational background will matter.
Yeah, but in general, there's like tons and tons of writing you can do. Take it from me. I mean, I have written for Fortune 500 companies, major national magazines. I find the degree thing matters if you want to be an editor of a major publication, and that is about the only instance I've seen where it even matters. Hey, some more people came on the phone. Hey, Deborah.
Hello.
Hi, how are you?
I'm good. How are you doing?
I'm doing great. I keep seeing you talking about wins and stuff. Do you have a question?
My question is a little different. How do you handle time management? Like if you're starting to get a lot of projects and just balancing them all?
Sounds like a great question for John, the productivity guy.
Yes. Yes, I'm happy to start with that one. The key thing is setting your priorities. You have to know what are the most important things to do first. And one question that I ask myself several times a day is, what is the best use of my time right now? And oftentimes that's doing your work during the workday, but other times it's I got to go pick up my kids, or I need to make dinner, or things like that. But what you really need to do is get your priorities straight, and it's important to make timelines of a project of what needs to be done for that project, when it's due, how much time overall it's going to take you to do that project, so you can set up a time budget for that project. And when you have multiple projects, you do that for all of your projects, and then you have to look at them and say, oh, well, this deadline is here, so I have to spend most of today doing this part on that. And you have to really look at it and make sure that you're doing the most important things when they need to be done. And something that happens to a lot of people, and has even happened to me in my life at various times, is sometimes there's something you need to do that is very important, and it's kind of a small thing, and we put it off, and then because you didn't do it, it winds up becoming a really big thing later on, like you needed to set up an interview with an important person, and you think, oh, I got to send that email, I didn't, and then you don't do it, and then you try to do it, and you don't have enough time to get it, and it winds up being a problem. So you need to really just sit down with those priorities and have some sort of planning system, however it works for you. It can be a daily planner, and perhaps in combination with a notebook and maybe a Word document that you use to keep track of everything you have to do and when it's due and when you have to have it done by.
Yeah, right on. I'm always, my joke is that my personal tagline would be ruthlessly organized and prioritized, because before I leave the office every day and the first thing when I get in every morning, I actually have a reporter's notebook by my desk. I'm very low tech. And I write down what are like the three or four things that must happen tomorrow.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and what are a couple of things that I would like to work ahead on. That I'm really big on working ahead and working in batches and doing the thing where you take a client and do their thing all day until it's done. I always say if you could complete a project and send a bill, do that. You know, if I could write an article and turn it in today, it's ready to write. I might just do that so that I can move something off the plate. And that's better than doing like 1 hour on each of 8 clients through the day. It will make you like schizophrenic. And it's, you know, you're switching your head to too many places. So, yeah, I try and look at that. What would be a good day to just do interview, you know, to ding experts and try and line up interviews for this? Because it's due here. I should go about 10 days before that and put a day for that. Okay, I need to write 8 more blog posts before I go on vacation if I don't want to have to write anything while I'm on vacation. So when would be a good maybe couple days to sit and just do nothing but those and get them done?
When you write, say, one blog post after another, your brain gets really used to it. It gets in the mindset of, I am writing blog posts, and you will find that you get more efficient. You will get more blog posts done in a day, say, in 8 hours. Let's say you got 8 posts done. It took you an hour per post. But if you were just writing one post at a time, it might take you an hour and 15 minutes or an hour and a half or something like that. So there's that thing that when you get in the flow doing a certain thing, your brain's all set and you can just go and go and go.
Yeah, well, that's so true for me. I find that, especially if I'm doing a client work, if I have a client that I do 4 blog posts a month for, 1 a week, I try and sit down and do those in a day because I'm in their head and then I just stay in their head. And it is so much more productive. But, you know, you do need to spend a decent amount of time organizing and planning. It's so worth the 5 or 10 minutes to go, okay, here are all the projects. I mean, you know, get one of those, like, desk blotter calendars if you need to. Or I actually organize it inside my email calendar on Entourage.
Mm-hmm.
You know, where are our article deadlines? Where are our blog post deadlines? When am I going to be out of town? When do I need to go to my daughter's recital and be out of the office and blow a big hole in the day, you know? And where is the usable time? We actually had a product when we had, I think, Mark Vardy on. He was the one who said you also look at whether it's a heavy lifting day or a light lifting day.
Uh-huh.
Like days where I have calls like this, to me, are often light lifting days because I know this big hole is going to be blown in the middle where my focus will be in a totally different place than my writing. so I tend to look at, you know, oh, I might write on my own blog, which for me is easy compared to writing my Forbes blog, which is hard and has to be at a, like a really high sort of journalistic level and has like 8 different technical elements I have to do for each post.
Wow.
Yeah, it's their blogs are very technical. And, you know, we create slideshows, and it's all like techies. It's a techie hell. And I find that I need to save those for a day that's really clear. And
mm-hmm.
I need to look through newscatchers and develop ideas. You know, so those complex things I'm saving for a heavy lifting day. And or like Monday, I had to write a 2,000-word feature for the next year's edition of the Writer's Market, which to me is like so prestigious, and it gives me a massive complex, and it's a really long article, 2,000 words. So I pretty much blocked out the whole day. I assumed it, I would be doing it the entire day and nothing else. And that was pretty much right. So hopefully that gives you a few of our little tips.
One more point, Deborah.
Go.
When you make to-do lists, you have a calendar, you put everything out there, it's really important to go back and actually look at that stuff and look at it multiple times a day, because a lot of people, they'll make a to-do list or they'll have their planner, and then they just don't look at it. They think, oh, I remember what I need to do today. And then eventually they go look 2 or 3 days later and they say, oh, I was supposed to email that editor to get back about this one project, and uh-oh, now
yeah,
I'm behind. So it's important to just keep on top of whatever priority time management planning system you use. Just make sure you stay on top of it.
Mm-hmm. Then the other thing I do, and I know Linda Formicelli's big into this too, is I will also blow that to-do list up if I get in a writing groove about something. Sometimes I'll just get in a groove thinking of blog post ideas for my blog, and I'll just like be doing that for 2 hours. I'll just be riffing and plugging things into my editorial calendar and moving them around and plotting out like a whole month's worth of posts. And if I'm just in the mood to do that, I just do. Because when you're fighting upstream of sort of what your muse is into, that always makes you less efficient. You know, when I don't feel like writing
true.
This now, you know, but you're making it, when you say, oh, I don't feel like writing this now, but you're making yourself write it, it's like it's always going to take twice as long.
Yeah.
And that's why it's a good idea to try to finish your projects early if you can. Give yourself, if you can finish 2 or 3 days early, number one, your editor is going to love you. But then number two, that can give you the freedom of not like, oh, it's due in 2 days and I have 16 hours worth of work to do on it. And then you're doing it, and if you're really not in the mood and you got to do it anyway, that can make your writing very unpleasant. So it's good to get things done ahead of time. And it's also nice to have in your schedule where you can say, what do I feel like doing today? I most feel like doing this. I could really, really flow on this thing, and then you can do that. And then there's some days where some things are harder to write than others. And there'll be a day where I think, you know, I'm feeling really strong. I got a great night's sleep. I'm feeling really good. I'm going to go into this really hard part of this project and just get the damn thing done.
Yeah.
So that's another tack to take.
I love to-do lists because sometimes I get a crappy night's sleep and I come in. Otherwise, I'd probably just sit there all day going, you know, if it'll take me all day to remember what the top priority was, you know, if I don't have it written down somewhere. So that's why.
What I do if I don't get a good night's sleep is I'll get up, I usually have a cup of half-calf in the morning, I'll do that, and I will work for a couple of hours while I still have a little bit of momentum from having had some sleep, and then sometimes I'll go back to bed at 10 a.m. and just sleep for 40 minutes or so, and that usually will perk me back up.
For me, it's like 1:30, yeah, and then I'll do 15 minutes, and then I can do the afternoon. And you know, to me, that is one of the major thrills of being a freelancer is you can eat when you're hungry and sleep when you're tired. And you should. You totally should. You know, if 15 minutes of napping will make you able to crank it out all afternoon, you should totally go to sleep. And
I take a nap probably 4 afternoons out of 5. I take a nap. It's usually 15 to 20 minutes, and I have a little kitchen timer that I set. And I'll set it for 15 or 20 minutes, and I usually go all the way out within 4 or 5 minutes, and I get 10 or 15 minutes of just, like, deep rest. Then that timer goes off. I wake up. I feel good and relaxed. I pop right up, and I get back to work. And it's really important to use a timer because it will allow your brain to totally relax. because you won't
right.
have to
you're not
think,
worried
oh,
you're
I can only
sleep
lay here
for
15
hours.
Minutes and then I got to get up. You won't go all the way down because you'll keep thinking about the clock and what you got to do and all that stuff. But naps are great.
My favorite is to nap on my deck, and I set it up so that I'm under a cover, and the sun will move and go on my face in about 20 minutes. So it'll wake me up. That's the dream situation. Obviously not this time of year.
Nice.
But that's my fave. But yeah, you want to set it up, or I'll do it when I know my daughter's about to come home from the bus and I know like her coming in will wake me up, or and because you don't want to do sleep for like an hour and a half or something. Studies have shown like 15, 20 minutes is the max. Otherwise you're just going to be logy and confused.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, Colette in Milwaukee, are you on the phone?
Oh, yeah. Yes, I am.
Hey, how are you?
Good, but I'm mainly just listening in right now.
Okay. All righty.
Oh, yeah.
K in Atlanta. It just says letter K.
That must be me.
Hi. What's your name?
Hi. I think I'm just listening right now, too.
Okay.
But I appreciate you checking in.
Okay. Well, I always prioritize trying to hit all the phone people at least once to, in case they want to ask a question, because I never do phone questions like that. So Joanna has a great Den question. The resource area is awesome, but a wee bit overwhelming. Yeah, we know. What would you suggest as the very first step one to start on the Den or in general? Start by introducing yourself in the introduction and tell us what kind of writing you're into, what you're here to learn, and that'll help the moderators suggest appropriate resources for you. If you are a brand new freelancer, I highly recommend taking the bootcamp, the step-by-step guide to freelance writing success. You can find it on the eCourses and Bootcamps tab and click through to there. It's like 4 one-hour presentations and handouts and stuff, and it really goes from building a portfolio from nothing and going to where you have a portfolio and you're ready to pitch paying businesses. And I think Syed has a similar question. He says, I have no website, no clips, no experience. What are 3 things I need to focus on this weekend to jumpstart my career? You are going to want to get a website up, and if you look at the Your Website, Your Writer website and blog e-course that we have, there's tons and tons of resources about best practices of how to set one up. You can also look at our writer website review forum thread and see me critiquing dozens and dozens of sites. And you'll see me saying some of the same things over and over and over. That'll give you an idea of like common mistakes that people make on their writer websites. You should get one up even though you don't have any clips yet. Just get something up. And then I would give you the same advice. Do that step-by-step bootcamp, and that'll give you a lot of ideas on how to find first clients and do a little volunteer writing to get some clips and then to do paying work. Hi, Anthony. Anthony says, could you repeat those Google search tips for finding editors? I just Google contact editor name magazine, like, contact Joe Smith Shape magazine, and just see if I can find, often if they write, there'll be a tagline on some of their articles that'll say, you can email Joe at this address. Or it'll turn up an online masthead. You can also look for online mastheads. Often publications have them. So
the way that I find them is I will go to Google, and then I will put at the magazine name or the business name, and then I will put the editor's name and do that to find them. Or if you're just looking in general, you can put that and then just put the word editor and see what comes up, and you can find people that way too.
Yeah, and or, ask around your networks, hey, anybody written for this place? What's the editor's email?
Suggested looking for people on LinkedIn, because oftentimes right there on their LinkedIn profile, you will see their email address.
Yeah, or a link to their personal blog or something where you can find a contact. So Indie Freelance Girl says, how can you get assignments in white papers when you haven't written any? Most of what I currently write is media articles and web content. I have quite a few ideas. John, you have some thoughts?
I'm going to let you go first on this, Carol.
Okay. One technique I use, I like to call the law of simple addition, where you take that web content you've done, and maybe in there you've done some case studies and told some customer stories, And that's a bit like a white paper. White papers often have those stories within them. So you might make the case, you know, I've written for businesses before, I've documented their successes before, and a white paper is just another way of arranging this material, basically. I mean, a white paper is really like a big article assignment in a way. You'll often be talking to multiple people. So to me, the articles that you've done, it all kind of plays into it. And the other thing you can do is write a white paper about your business. When we had Mitt Ray on, who is a white paper expert, he said he wrote several as samples, just on his own as exercises. So, you know, you could always create one about why hiring a freelance writer will grow your sales and create a white paper. You know, learn about the format and show you know how to do it. Write even a two-pager, just a really short one. Millie says,
Can I come back to that, Carol?
Oh, yeah,
go
ahead.
I have a point I want to make about that.
Go ahead.
In addition to what Carol said, you can also start with smaller clients and businesses and get a few samples, get some work doing it and some experience by doing it for companies that are happy to get it done without having to pay a whole bunch of money to a top-of-the-line freelance writer. And that way you can get the experience under your belt and get some recommendations and testimonials that can help you to go further.
Yeah, right on to all of that. Questions are coming in. I have one more new person who has come on the phone from Wytheville, Virginia. Hello, are you on the phone? Hello, someone in Virginia, do you have a question on the telephone? Hello, boy, we got a lot of shy people on the telephone this year. So I will stick with my Q&A questions. Millie was saying, how important is it to run your own blog for pursuing a B2B copywriting career? Well, it depends if you want to blog for a business-to-business company. If not, it's not entirely essential. I feel like there's sort of a mania out there where everyone thinks they have to have a blog now. And if you're not looking for paid blogging work, I don't know that it's vital. There are other ways to promote your writing and build your ranking on your website and then blogging.
Yeah, I see a lot of people, a lot of writers and other business people who feel like, oh, I have to blog to show that I'm competent or real or things like that. It can help some people, but I've also seen a lot of writers with blogs that I can tell by looking at their Aweber stats and their compete rank stats that they're not getting much traffic at all, yet they're writing or they're posting twice a week and they've been doing it for 3 years and not much is really happening for them with that. I think they would be much better served with going and marketing themselves very assertively to various clients to get good paying work rather than taking that time and writing on their blog. It's yeah. Better to pursue, go where the money is and get the assignments, I would say. That doesn't work for everybody, but I think that's just something that people need to think about. There's this, as Carol was saying, like, oh, yes, I have to blog. And it can just be a huge time suck if you're not careful with a very low payoff. So
Yeah, I mean, blogging is a huge time commitment. You have to do it regularly or it looks abandoned and sad, and that's not helping you. And you have to know how to promote a blog and be doing it, or mm-hmm. you aren't getting any marketing spin out of it. And when they get there to look at your blog as a sample of your writing, they're seeing no retweets and no comments, and it isn't helping you. And
exactly.
The big thing people miss.
If you're going to blog, you also have to do social media with it to get people coming to your blog and just to grow it and all that stuff and to just even help you get search engine traffic. Just all those things kind of go together, and you have to be pretty strong on all of them to build up a successful blog with a lot of traffic.
Yeah, it's the thing is, blogging is for when you have a passion about something, and you can imagine yourself writing dozens and dozens and dozens of different aspects of it on into the indefinite future. And if you don't have that, I strongly recommend you don't blog, because it will be torture. And I've seen people, like, you know, I'm a member of A-List Blogger Club as well, and people in there will be like, I go to start writing my blog and I just start to cry and it's so much stress. And I'm like, wow, stop right now. Because that is not how blogging is supposed to be. Blogging is supposed to be fun and exciting and you love doing it. And I mean, I can hardly sleep at night. When I started my blog, I would just be like, oh, I can't wait to get up. Oh, I have this great idea. You know, I was so fired up. And if you're not like that about a topic and you can just see yourself blogging and you'd love to connect with other people around that topic, and just don't do it. you will be torturing yourself. And as John says, there's a lot of other ways to market your business that might get more direct results. So Jamie has another productivity question. Any advice about staying focused while working at home? And I'm totally going to let John take this because I have no problem with this. I am laser focused. I am not doing laundry or looking in the refrigerator or, you know, getting in. I'm not talking to the delivery guy. When I'm working, and maybe this comes from the fact that I worked staff writing jobs from home where I was on the clock for an employer. I just developed that discipline that, like, these are my work hours and I'm in my work head, but what about you, John?
Well, that is a very important question, and most of us work at home. And there's several important tips here. Number one, you need to talk to your family, whoever you live with, and make them know that when you are working that you need to be left alone, unless it's for a major emergency, that you need to be left alone so you can do your writing. Otherwise, your kids or your spouse or whomever is just going to be coming in, saying hi, doing this, bugging you and all that stuff. So you have to be very clear with your family on that. Also, you need to set a schedule for yourself where you say, I'm going to get up from 7 a.m. to 10 a.m. is my time to really focus on my business writing or whatever type of writing that you do. And you really have to stick to that because there's no boss there, so you have to be your own boss. And you have to discipline yourself to not get distracted by all the things that are there in your house, like you don't watch TV and, you know, you don't – it's fun to play with the dog sometimes, and that can be a good break for a few minutes, an hour. You do want to take a break at least once an hour for a few minutes, but you really have to discipline yourself to really focus and get your work done. I oftentimes will use a timer where I set it, and I will work for, say, 50 or 55 minutes straight. And then I let myself take a few minutes to maybe do a little bit of yoga or go outside or do something like that. That's very important to do. Also, one thing that I've found is there are a lot of distraction around the home. So what I do is I will actually leave and I will go work at the library or I will go work at the coffee shop or something like that. It gets me away from all the distractions of my home.
Yeah, Linda Formicelli's big on that. I know she goes to Barnes & Noble is her big hangout. And I actually went and worked at a co-working space over the summer, actually, for, like, the bulk of the summer. And that really was great for me. That really broke up my, you know, home distraction and just gave me a fresh outlook. I just was really – I felt like it was great. It was really productive. And, you know, and the thing is – it's all about habits. You know, we are all creatures of habit. So if you develop that habit, mine is like I get up at 6:30, I have to get kids on different buses, then I want to work out for an hour. 9 o'clock, I want to be at my desk. You know, I work, I sort of gobble my lunch so that I can get up earlier to be with my kids. You know, by 3 o'clock is my dream, I'll be done. 5 o'clock, absolute outside. And, you know, and then I'm off until they go to sleep. And then if I have to do more, I might do a little in the evening, you know, and Saturdays, I'm never, ever, ever on the computer. These are my habits. Sunday, I might do maybe an hour or two. That is all I am willing to deal with. You know, you create the more you do with that schedule, it becomes a habit, and your body starts to go, oh, yeah, time to work. It'll start to be sort of Pavlovian. Anyway, let's move on because there's a million questions. For writing white papers, do companies want you to have a background in their industry? Yeah, Laura, they usually would want to. You're probably not going to write a white paper first thing for a company. It's not a usual first project with a company that you ever get assigned. Usually you've already got a relationship, and then they say, okay, you know, you've been blogging for us, but, you know, we want to do this white paper. Or you've been, you know, writing articles, or you reported on us and wrote a story for a magazine, you know, but we're wondering if you would write a white paper. So Erin just says, great information. Cool. Joanna Cruz asks actually a very intriguing question. Do you have a muse? And if so, how do you find it, John?
Hmm. Do I have a muse? That's a very good question. Yes, we all have creativity inside of us, and it's important to be able to tap into that creativity. I find my creativity, my muse, when I'm feeling happy, when I'm feeling relaxed, when I've gotten enough sleep, when there's nothing really stressing me out. And actually, I get my best ideas when I'm going for walks or for hikes. I'm a major hiker. I've actually written 2 hiking guidebooks, and I have actually have a hiking blog and things like that, too. I love to hike. And that's when I find I get all my best ideas. I'm just out walking around. There's really nothing from the world of civilization to distract me. And that's when things really flow for me. So what about you, Carol?
Interesting. Well, as someone who has had to file for 12 years, 3 or 4 stories every single week, 50 weeks a year, I know how to write even if I'm not feeling special and magical. And those of us who've done staff writing gigs kind of chortle at this question often, of this idea of like waiting until you're all inspired to write. Like, I just never had that luxury. I learned how to deliver no matter what. And that still serves me very well. But that said, I do try and write what I'm in the mood to write, what I more feel like writing and what I'm jazzed by at this moment,
whenever
possible.
Yes, you want to write what you feel like writing when you can, but you also, when the time comes and you've got to get it done, you just got to get it done. And freelance writers have been doing this for a long time. You have the deadlines, and you got to meet your deadlines. I just, for me, when I was talking about being out on the trails, that's where I get ideas for blog posts.
Totally.
And I'm in the process of creating several information products for freelance writers and the self-employed. And that's where things really flow for me, when I get my, like, really deep, important creative ideas for myself.
Yeah, or the shower, or doing yoga, or, you know, it's amazing how once you get out of away from that screen, how many ideas you could have. When I'm driving away to go on a vacation, I always have a reporter's notebook with me. It's just like, scribble, scribble, scribble. The minute I leave, 50 things come to me. Oh, I should do this, that. You know, I come home with lists and lists. So, go ahead.
I have a little handheld digital recorder. It's very, very small, just a little bit bigger than, say, a cigarette lighter or something. I always have that in my pocket, and whenever I get an idea, I just pull it out, boom, press record, and I just dictate for however long. But that way I can capture all of my ideas, and I can also use it to capture even just mundane to-do lists, like, oh, yeah, make sure I buy broccoli tonight at the store, things like that. But it allows my brain to relax as I'm not having to keep a mental to-do list. So
yeah,
I would suggest people get something so that you can easily save your ideas. If you really feel you want to write it down, then that's fine. But the nice thing about the recorder is it's just right there in your pocket. And if you're doing something where it's not so convenient to, like, pull out a notepad, it can work much better.
Yeah, I just find the do you have a muse, you know, and capturing your muse is a conversation fiction writers tend to have. And those of us who are trying to make a sort of work-a-day living out of this just sort of don't have the luxury of waiting around until inspiration is striking us. Like, you need to get out of that idea and train yourself up to do it no matter what. I have written articles when I have gotten, like, 2 hours of sleep, been up with, you know, ill children, had people screaming at me, horrible personal life things are happening, and I just have to deliver, you know, and that's the habit you want if you want to make a good living at this. You can't have this whole, you know, I had one writer email me once and say, I just finished a big project and I was just so mentally exhausted by that, I needed to take 2 weeks off to recover. And I was like, wow, you are not going to be able to earn very well if you need to do that.
Yeah,
and
if you
so,
need 2 weeks every time you finish a big project, that's going to be a problem.
That's really going to hit your annual income. So on to a question from Cheryl. I ghostwrite a blog, and I keep the client secret. If I'm pitching a new client and they want to see samples, what should I provide? I don't want to send them to my personal blog. Is it okay to give them consumer magazine clips? Yeah, people always love those. But also, get permission from your client to just show them one of those as a sample and get a testimonial. I mean, I'm always trying to work around those NDAs for the purposes of portfolio. I think you can often get a chance to do that.
Yeah, just ask them. A lot of people will understand that you need to market yourself and they want to help you, and they would often allow you to do that.
Kathleen says, do you find LinkedIn folks will respond? I've tried a few with no results. I don't usually try them necessarily on LinkedIn. I'm using LinkedIn to just find, you know, a link back to where their actual normal email is usually the technique I use.
Yeah, that's how you want to do it. A lot of people have their notifications from LinkedIn turned off.
Yeah, mine are off.
If you're not careful, that you will get bombarded with stuff from all sorts of stuff from LinkedIn. So a lot of people will just go blanket, I'll just turn it off, and then when I feel like it, I'll go there and see what's there in my inbox. So, yeah, you want to find their personal email address and then contact them that way.
Yeah, I don't do a lot of sort of totally cold reach-outs on LinkedIn to people who don't know me. Amber has the classic editor question, which editor do you send queries to? Editor-in-chief, executive editor, managing editor, associate editor, seniors editor, articles editor. What's your philosophy on that?
Well, you need to find the editor that is obviously most appropriate for what you're doing and what you're sending it to. If you go too high, they may not even want to bother with it. You know, that's like, oh, you went too high. You weren't even supposed to send this to me. So it depends on the company and whether it's a consumer magazine or things like that. I find in higher education, I actually market to a wide range of editors, everywhere from editorial assistants, which are right on the very bottom, up to fairly high-level managing editors and things like that, just to get my name in there because they can all funnel me to the right editors that can hire me for projects on textbooks. But it's going to depend on the specific industry and those sorts of factors.
Yeah, true enough. So we had a few latecomers on the phone here. I'm just going to check in with them quickly, see if they have questions, and then we're going to wrap this up. Here is Cassandra, I think, in Lafayette, Louisiana. Hello? Hello? Are you on the telephone? Boy, it's like the most shrinking violet group on the phone. I have a couple people in Chapel Hill, North Carolina, who came in. So if you are there, say hello.
Yes, hi. This is Diana. I think you guys are so inspiring. You have no idea. I just am so amazed, and I secretly think you get more than 24 hours a day. But I wanted to ask you, what do you think about advertising on Craigslist? Has that been a useful tool or no?
If you want to get a lot of really low-ball, low-grade clients, I actually do know a writer who used to do that, and that's how she was getting clients, but they were never good clients.
I see why.
You know, Craigslist has a bad reputation as a real low, you know, bottom-of-the-barrel, scummy, scammy, low-grade client kind of hangout. You know, you don't find the Fortune 500 looking for writers on Craigslist.
Fair enough. Well,
or
thank
Major
you for
Mag.
Sharing. Thank you for about your work ethic. I really am motivated by that.
Well, my pleasure. And there is yet another person from Chapel Hill as well. Hello? Hello, hello. Are you another person from Chapel Hill, North Carolina, besides that person we just heard from? If so, please say hello. Hello? Huh. I don't know. Maybe she came in twice. And someone in Eugene.
Ooh, Eugene.
Yeah. Hello? Hello there. Eugene, Oregon, are you on the phone? Boy. Okay. Well, I think that runs through everybody. Just last second, if anyone has final questions that they want to leave in Q&A, I'm just going to give you about 30 seconds to put anything else. Oh, you know what? I think Teresa had one follow-up question that I haven't gotten to. She said, I ran across a short piece in Discover magazine that mentioned a health-related discovery, and they said they mentioned in the piece in March, so I get the plan ahead for later issues, you know, how you have to write ahead for magazines like 6 months. They said within the year they'd be testing on humans. To make a long story short, something like this might be good to follow up on. Yes? Yeah, sure,
mm-hmm.
Absolutely. Following
yeah,
the trail of any forward-looking statements you find in articles where they say, next year this will happen. Yeah, I put those in a string file and then come back and see what happened. There's not nearly enough of that of those follow-up kind of stories where you come back and see what happened. You know, some company will say, we're going to open 100 stores, and you come back and, like, they opened 2, you know. But nobody does that circling back. So, those, you know, I just put those in. I mean, often you come back and, like, just sort of nothing's happened, but sometimes there's an interesting story there. So final question comes from Candace. Do you have suggestions for breaking into copywriting for direct mail marketing? I've never done it. John?
I have not done that either. I know that you can find lots of expensive courses online that will say that they will teach you how to do that.
Yeah, exactly what I was going to say. Yeah, this is the AWAI territory for me. I actually once had a real off-the-record conversation with a big writer who does a lot of trainings and has done some of it, and he said that it's very competitive to break in. It's one of these fields where a few people make a ton of money, and, you know, how much direct mail do you get in the mail anymore?
Well, I get none myself.
I get none.
Or very close to none.
Yeah. I think it's a shrinking marketplace. Those who are really, really good at it make amazing amounts of money, but it's like, I think it's sort of a moonshot. It's almost like becoming a best-selling novelist or something. It's
yeah.
really hard. But you need to either, take a class and learn about that industry, or maybe you have a client and then they want to do direct mail and it sort of happens organically where you kind of get to grow into it, or do some yourself to audition for it. You know, do a direct mail campaign to prospects, and that's Chris Marlowe, our moderator in the den, does teach people to do that, and that's a great way to show you can do direct mail.
And something else, as far as getting information on doing that, you can go to Amazon.com and research and find books that will cost you $15-$20 and will give you a lot of information. And also at your local library, there may be some books on it. I would get started that way as far as, like, doing your basic research on that rather than plunking down $1,000 or $2,000 for somebody's course or something.
Yeah, I'm actually going to go back on my word and take one more question from Beth because this is a good question. I know about Writer's Market for finding magazines, but there's a ton of online publications that aren't in there. They are actually just beginning to include those. It's sort of a nascent category in the writer's market, and I would expect they'll have more, like, by probably the next edition. She says, am I missing another big directory of markets? No, there is no sort of go-to spot for online publications. It's a really, you know, emerging place. I mean, I wrote $2,000 online articles for a company website. You know, it's such a varied market. It's really about doing your research. You say, do I just have to Google up sites? It's really more sophisticated than that. You know, you want to ask around your writer network and find really legit sites that pay well and pay on time and, you know, have a real product or service they sell. You know, there's sort of a million scams on the internet. So ask yourself who's behind the curtain of the site and what's their business model. Because if they don't have a real product or service they sell, and it's just we're going to jam tons of quickie articles on here and put ads around it and hope to make lots of affiliate revenue off that. I think in general we've concluded that is not a business model for 99%.
Yeah, that's like a typical content mill operation.
Right, that's the mill model. I think we think that for 99% of the companies that try that, it will fail, and you don't want to be there, and they're never going to pay you well. Because they don't have any money, because their business isn't making money, you know. So you look for real businesses selling real products and services to real people, and you won't go wrong, you know. And the other thing is, a lot of print publications are going online, and they're commissioning online exclusive content, and that's often a way to sort of transition over. And that's totally what happened to me with Entrepreneur. I was writing for the magazine, and now I actually don't write for the print magazine at all. I only write for them online because it actually pays better and is easier to get assignments. So that can be a sort of way in to the other side of a publication. But other than that, you know, just keep your ear to the ground on topics that you're interested in. And, yeah, avoid any of these. You can write on any topic you want. Anytime they say that, just run the other direction.
Yeah. They will pay very low rates.
Because, yeah, that is never a legitimate business model for anything. That is just baloney. Anyway, well, this has been fun. I'm sorry all our phone people were so shy, because I love talking to people live, but we got a few phone questions in.
Yeah.
And I think this we actually ended up covering a lot of great basic freelancer topics, and I'm sure other members will get to listen to the recording and catch the transcript and learn from that. Thanks for coming on, everybody, and thanks so much for coming, John.
Oh, you're very welcome. Thanks for having me, Carol.
My pleasure.